Monster Hearts is a tabletop RPG of the messy lives of teenage monsters.
I'm Epistory Richard, co-organiser of the London Indie RPG Meetup Group.
My name is Robert Cannell, and I'm an RPG zine editor and non-award-winning game designer.
So Monster Hearts, aside from being a personal favourite game of mine, is also one that's had a really big impact on the indie RPG community. Even though it was released back in 2012, it was still one of the most popular games to be played at conventions and at meetups, even 2 years later in 2014. It's brought a slew of new gamers to the indie RPG scene, and it's opened up the eyes of many players to different ways to play. So I think it's definitely one to consider.
So what are the key features of the game that kind of make that connection outside of traditional gaming?
The most obvious point is around the genre. It's based in the teenage, high school, supernatural, horror, romance genre, which has such a wide appeal across different kind of geeky following. There are so many people who are into different geeky things but nevertheless love Buffy, or love True Blood, or love Twilight, or love those kind of teenage coming-of-age movies but nevertheless have that kind of supernatural horror mix. So it has a really strong genre, something that appeals to people outside of regular role-playing background. Beyond that, though, I mean, because you can say the similar thing about, well, doesn't, like, the... I mean, there's a Buffy role-playing game.
So yeah, exactly. I'd be very interested to see why something that was dedicated to the genre has in some ways been surpassed by...
The designer originally said about their inspiration is that they want to make a story about people and monsters playing with one another's hearts and bodies. So they want hot monsters getting emotionally entrenched and then hurting each other. Playing teenage, sexy monsters, like at high school, so you're alienated and you're a loner, but you're sexy and you're dangerous. Mm. I don't think a mainstream company producing a Buffy role-playing game would ever bake so heavily into one of their games.
There's a couple of interesting things there. I mean, you're basically suggesting that this game is the Buffy and Spike relationship for everyone.
The game itself started as a joke. The designer happily admits to crack this joke about how about we use the Apocalypse World engine in order to make Twilight the role-playing game. Because Apocalypse World is also hot and sexy as well as being violent.
Well, I'm glad you touched on this topic, because I want to talk about hot and sexy mechanics now.
Right.
You're right, it's a Powered by the Apocalypse game. On the surface of it, seems a slightly unusual choice, right? The characteristics of it, very roughly, are that something is wrong, the world is ending, but you don't know how, you don't know why, and you can't do anything about it. There's a certain amount of nihilistic bleakness to it.
The key point of the background within Apocalypse World is the concept of scarcity.
And that seems slightly at odds to me with the basis of what you might call young adult fiction, which is that essentially you're coming into adulthood and you're coming into your life, and it's essentially, while it's difficult and painful, it's also optimistic. It's going somewhere good. So I think it'd be interesting to talk about what is different in Monster Hearts that brings in that teen experience.
Yeah, there still is that concept of you're going to grow out of this, but it is far more rooted in the sense of the unpredictable nature and the volatile nature of teenage life, where you aren't in control of your body, you aren't in control of how you feel about things, you're not even in control of your life. You are starting to feel like an adult. You're starting to have the internal power of an adult, but you don't yet have the responsibilities or the privileges or the control over yourself. This is the first game that I've ever encountered which has a section called queer content, which talks about, which actually encourages you to play with your sexuality. So you have the concept, which is quite controversial in the game, where you have the basic move of turning someone on. And if you succeed in turning them on, then they are turned on by you, irrespective of your age, irrespective of your gender, irrespective of what they had assumed their sexuality was. What they do about that is entirely down to them, but they are nevertheless turned on by it. There is a concept of growing up moves within Monster Hearts. By that time where you are starting to grow up, really that's the point where you're looking to retire your character and start a new one. Because it's the wildness and the unpredictability and the messed up nature of the teenage existence, which is where the game really wants to sit.
I think one of the interesting things that Monster Hearts does for me in a kind of political way is attempt to reclaim adolescence. So it tries to say that confusion over sexuality is actually gender fluidity. It's a good thing. It's about exploring and understanding who you are and not having the boundaries imposed on you by conventions, by adulthood. And I think it's, you know, that's one interesting thing in the dice, that the dice and the mechanics will force you, your character will go into situations that maybe as a player you might feel uncomfortable with, or maybe you're kind of quite discordant with what's happened in the character's life before. It's an aspect of Apocalypse World, but there you're much more kind of occupying the archetype. And I think one of the interesting aspects as a player is that that dice mechanic is repurposed to create that sense that, like, even as a player, you're going with the flow rather than directing a character.
And it's more than just going with the flow as a player, it's as the GM as well. And this, I think, gets back to why Apocalypse World was used as a base for this, is that Apocalypse World is setting up fundamentally an unstable situation. So you have a hard holder, you have a variety of other character types, but fundamentally the situation you're starting with cannot hold. And equally, the setup for Monster Hearts is an unpredictable situation, one where however you're starting is that current situation or linking relationships should not and cannot hold. It's going to be broken apart. It's going to be reformed in a variety of different ways. And it is the concept of playing to find out, which is a baked-in principle of both Apocalypse World and also in Monster Hearts, where you, as the MC, are not supposed to be driving or railroading action into a particular direction. Is that you're setting things up, you're trying to find wedges between the characters in order to spark interesting kind of changes to their relationships, but you're not pushing them on a particular like journey in order to get them to a particular destination.
So Apocalypse World deals with scarcity, and therefore the implied goal for characters is to survive and thrive. What is Monster Hearts' goal? What are these characters going towards?
Yeah, I mean, they're being torn in a couple of different directions. I mean, the game is working from the position of all these teenage series and movies where their monstrous nature is an analogy for different aspects of the teenage experience. Where you have any of these teenage monsters, there is an inherent question within them. As they grow, will they be able to tame their monstrous side? Will they be able to control it properly, or will they be lost to it?
Right.
So every single character has that inherent question, and playing the game is not about playing it of like, will they survive? Though there is a fair casualty rate in Monster Hearts. The question is about the kind of person they're going to become.
But is that something that's inherent in the game, or is that a responsibility of the MC to see that agenda and drive that forth?
So it's something which is built into the premise, and there are kind of mechanics around it as well. That being said, there is no, you're playing to find out, so there's nothing in the overall structure which is forcing you to choose at these particular points. It's something which I think is more inherent within the genre itself.
So one of the things in the designer statement was monsters and people. I would say maybe one of my big criticisms of Monster Hearts is there's a lot of monster and very rarely much people. Without supernatural powers, people who are framing this world, so teachers, just regular people at school, family. It always seems to me that Monster Hearts ultimately becomes about the hot monsters doing dark things, often in no real context, I think.
And I think that's kind of reflective of its source material. Is that most of these things do disappear up into their own mythology. But no, there isn't a huge amount of humanity. Is you get your skin book, which is like your character class or your character trope. You have lots of cool, like, monster-related moves on there. People bring in or the lore that you know around kind of werewolves. So they bring in things like werewolf tribes. For if you're playing a vampire, inevitably people will bring in concepts of like from Vampire the Masquerade. If you've got ghouls and so forth, you might bring in kind of concepts of death or zombies or, you know, kind of dark magics. Like you have a witch, you bring in covens and so forth. It's a very easy way to go to, and it's very, I've got to say, it is very challenging in order to keep any game balanced between its monstrous and its human side. Really, I mean, I think what the game is looking to do is to embrace a kind of emotional role-playing as opposed to the more standard physical type that you have. The very first design thread is still there on their forums, and so it's really interesting to be able to go back and look to see. It's not all listed out there, but how some of the first things that which helped define the game to them. And the first move that they ever put in was when you try to win someone's heart, roll plus sway. This encapsulated, certainly at the time, this encapsulated the game for them. It was about trying to win someone's heart and then mess with them, and then like have someone else try to win your heart, and to make these kind of messy relationships in the way that Twilight was essentially this kind of forced love triangle. And it was about kind of this denied passion or between these kind of Romeo and Juliet stories. So you do lose, so the human side is, you do lose as part of play, like the school side you lose, but really the more important fundamental is around this emotional role play, about are you keeping these relationships where it is about trying to increasing the intimacy between characters, and what are the challenges in the way of it, and what destroys it, and what creates it with another person.
So if you're not a fan of supernatural romance shows, is there anything in this game for you? Because it sounds like all the appeal is based around genre, about effectively wanting to live in that kind of paradigm.
Yeah, it is all about the genre. I mean, let's be clear about this, is that for those people who aren't into the genre, they will have a tough time, first of all, knowing what to do in the game, and secondly, finding any kind of enjoyment with it. Equally, some people find teenagers very annoying. Part of the freedom within Monster Hearts is that you are a teenager, and you can act in ways that are not consistent with yourself. You're not a stalwart warrior or a wise mage or anybody with any kind of position of authority. You are a kid who's growing up, and that gives you part of the permissioning within the game to have you act in a way which is irresponsible. Because the most out of the game is it is fundamentally a game for players to interact with each other rather than for players as a unit to interact with the outsides. It's a PvP game, albeit that PvP is more about emotional and social interaction more than actually just slugging somebody in the face or hitting them with an axe. Where there is no tension within your group, then a lot of the game is going to fall flat. So if you go into the game thinking, we are going to play this like a Buffy Monster of the Week episode where everybody is adding their own particular skill or contributing to it, you're not going to engage with a lot of the mechanics. If you go into it with, like, oh, it's going to be one of those Buffy episodes where the Dark Slayer comes in and she's going to sleep with the guy who the other girl has been in love with for years, and she's going to be left crying in the toilets while the other guy is feeling really guilty about it, while the Dark Slayer is like, well, F you guys, I do what I want. And then you're going to engage a lot more with the mechanics.
Okay, so let's get back to some more hot design talk. We know where it came from.
It's powered by the Apocalypse game, and it doesn't bring, I mean, the stuff that it brings, which is different from Apocalypse World, apart from the genre, is the concept of strings. So that's something which is essentially a combination of HX and barter and hold. So if you put all those together, they were very early elements of the game to be developed. And it's all about trying to gain access or gain a hold over somebody's heart. It's like, it's emotional. It gets described early on as emotional hold. You change up some of the stats, so you only have four stats, and they're hot, cold, volatile, and dark. You have basic moves, but you have basic moves in Apocalypse World. You have sex moves, which are more explicit than the ones you have in Apocalypse World. I mean, they're called sex moves as opposed to special moves. You have a concept of conditions, which essentially perform the role of both your reputation, but also your current state, your current physical or emotional state. You have the concept of darker selves as well, which is the trigger for your more monstrous element.
Can we just spend a minute or two on darker self? Because I think it's one of the interesting innovations in Monster Hearts, is it kind of reflects that dual nature of the character.
So the darker self is basically your opportunity in order to play the monstrous part of yourself. So if you are playing Angel from Buffy, this is your chance to play Angelus, for example. If you're playing Oz, this is your chance to play the wolf. I think what is quite savvy within this game is the recognition that it is quite socially disruptive around the table for one person to act all monstrous for a period of time. And so what the designer has put in there is a clear permission slip to say, if you are in this particular state, you are going to act monstrously. This is how you act monstrously, and this is how you escape from it. And so everybody who's in the game understands that a certain element of playing your monster is part of the social contract in playing the game. They all have it in front of them, they all have the similar opportunity, and they all know that you're going to escape from it. And so when you're doing it, everybody understands that it's part of the license within the game. And it's tremendous fun to be able to act in a way which is not for the benefit of the group all the damn time. You're not always having to make the group optimal decision, as you might do in like a party game or like an investigative game, is that you have that liberty to go and screw things up and mess things up as much as you want. If you're in that darker self mode, or just because you're a teenager.
Yeah, and also it allows for anti-heroic resolutions, right? You know, because there is a villain, but actually if you use your darker self to overcome that villain, it itself creates quite an interesting dilemma for the rest of the group. The whole thing of Buffy having a code of not killing people, for example, and then other characters saying, well, in this mode I can. Then you have to decide, can I be part of the gang anymore?
And you can have those bits which is part of the genre of the soul-searching moment, the quintessential moment where the teenager is trying to figure out who they are, which comes back to part of your kind of character progression or part of your overall arc within the game of, are you a human or are you a monster?
And so Darkest Self stands out for me as something unique in the whole family of the games. I can't think of another Apocalypse World game that has a kind of inverse of the character that you are deliberate, whether you were definitely expected to go to.
Yeah, I love the concept of the darker self. I wouldn't say it always works as intended, and I think there are problems with its implementation here, but as a concept and as an element to bring into your game, a very specific trigger and escape clause in order to be able to play your character very differently is great.
Is this one of the great games, then?
I think at this point we need to talk about what we mean by our canon. Because fundamentally what we have said around our canon is that the games we are looking to curate into this list is one where we believe that the game itself effectively conveys its objectives, effectively and consistently. What I think we need in addition to that is a bucket list. So these are games that are just games that you should play. Is that these are not necessarily games that you need to look at as a designer and go, wow, these are really effective games. How did they achieve all these things? But these are games you should definitely sit down and play at some point because either they're tremendous fun or they have been really influential in the community, even if taking the game in and of itself, it is not hugely effectively or coherently designed. So Monster Hearts for me definitely and predictably goes into that bucket list of games that I think everybody should have a think about playing. It's not like Microscope where I would absolutely say everybody should play this game just so they have it as a tool available to use. If the Monster Hearts genre, if the teen supernatural romance horror genre doesn't appeal to you, then you're not going to enjoy this a huge amount unless you're sitting and playing with people who you just enjoy playing with. But if it does at all appeal to you, then definitely you should sit down and play this game. Play it safely, obviously. Make sure, and this is what I said about, this is what I wrote just recently in a thread of somebody who wasn't comfortable with certain aspects, like with the turn-on aspect of the game. This is a game where if you are running it as the MC, you have to follow that principle of being a fan of the players. You're not there in order to defeat them or in order to be some kind of impartial arbiter. You have to be their fan. And it's more than just being a fan of your playing characters. You also need to look out for the players themselves, as distinct from the characters. Equally, as a player, you need to be looking out for your other players. You, like, through your character, can be doing terrible things to them, but it's a big difference about your character doing terrible things to their character, and they are loving it, and this is because this is a story they want to tell, versus your character doing terrible things to them, and them going, this is really upsetting me as a player. So, absolutely, the genre appeals at all. You want to play this game. Should it be in the canon in terms of effective and consistent and coherent game design? There, I feel, probably not. Certainly not yet.
The main issue for me is that there's just not enough support for the player through the mechanics for the genre to emerge. You have to understand the conventions and the situation, and then you project it through the interplay in the game. It is really easy for that to misfire. So, for example, we've talked a lot about the importance of the interaction and the change between the characters. And there is a mechanic around that. We've talked about strings and the idea of it being an emotional hold on someone. And, you know, you should literally be pulling their strings. But it's not strong enough and it's not fundamental enough that just by saying, I want to pull a string, that the game moves in the right direction.
Strings is a really great example of a concept that absolutely feeds into the core essence of this game. If it's all about capturing somebody's heart, then the concept of strings is great. My problem with it, I think it is not an improvement upon the HX that you have within Apocalypse World. HX, which is their term for kind of history or like a build-up of a relationship, grows from session to session. It builds gradually. Strings, meanwhile, are more basic form of hold. The acquisition of strings is not a good representation of characters who have known each other for years, or characters who have a huge emotional kind of codependence or something like that. You know, if I'm playing like a brother or a sister, then there is that long-term history, or the childhood sweetheart of somebody, but I may only have one or two strings on them, or no strings at all. And so under the strings currency, I have no emotional hold over them because I haven't been rolling to turn them on or kind of lashing out and choosing a particular result. This mechanic, which is supposed to be all about kind of like emotional intimacy and about taking somebody's heart or control over somebody's heart, is really just modeling these short-term infatuations as opposed to the longer-term relationships that you're kind of hoping are the ultimate kind of goal within this kind of genre.
So it always takes a very atomized view of relationships. It's always the first day at school, essentially.
They are too fluid to represent the entirety of what they're trying to represent. Another thing I want to talk about is conditions. Conditions try to represent two things. And normally you'd say from a game design perspective, that's good, that's efficient. But the two things they're trying to represent, it feels quite awkward. Well, you can have conditions that are things like kind of slut or gay or something like that, which are all about how you're perceived, but not necessarily anything about who you are, but just about your reputation at school. You also have ones that are things like covered in pig's blood, or terrified, or wounded, that trying to represent your current physical state. And while you have the mechanical effect of a plus one on dice roll, if you tag the condition, it's the same. Fundamentally, the two of them are very different things. How you stop being terrified in a particular moment is very different from how you shake off a particular kind of social stigma. And just having a plus one to a roll when you're tagging a particular condition, it feels as though we want to have this particular design element in, and we're just looking around for some kind of mechanical benefit to give you. Now,
and because they are made up at the time, they're not deeply integrated into the rules, right? I mean, that is something that Second Skins does do, is have something of a condition economy where moves become open if you have a condition.
There is an extent to that where you have things like the serpentine or with the snake food condition, or where you have the ghost and the blame condition. So part of that's in the core set, but logistically also, the conditions get written on your own character sheet. Nobody else at the table, unless they are making a note of everybody else's conditions as they go, can see it. Physically at the table, these things do not make an appearance.
They feel like they've been adapted from Fate's aspects, the idea of temporary aspects that are created on characters or scenes, or they've very much influenced it. But they don't have the corresponding rules around it to really make a difference. And the conditions, you know, like a condition like covered in pig's blood is very evocative, but what can you do with it?
I mean, really, it's most useful in terms of the shutdown move. And sorry, I guess I should mention that as well. Most of the moves that are in Monster Hearts have a relatively close equivalent within Apocalypse World. The shutdown, however, is the one that is the most different basic move. And I think it's the move that most people struggle with, partly because of its description and partly because of its name. And it got quite significantly retooled in the revised basic moves that Ross Cannon put out, for the better, as far as I'm concerned. And there's still a bit of confusion around what exactly it's supposed to be. The other thing I want to mention about the basic moves is that Runaway uses the same stat as Lash Out. They both use volatile stats. And I understand the reasoning behind it. It makes it, you know, it's a fight or flight instinct. If you're a volatile person, sometimes you're going to be in it, and other times that you're gonna run away from it. What that impact has, though, is that because volatile situations, so physical situations, are the only ones where you can really take physical harm. So if you're in a fight with somebody and you try to lash out and then you roll bad, and then it is natural that you take kind of harm as a result. But if you are, I mean, every single character starts off with +1 and +2 stats and -1 and 2 others, and then they get to add 1 to 1 of them. And for me, at least, playing is that it means that if I want to, just to protect myself physically as a character, is that I can't have too low a volatile. Because if I'm ever placed in a physical situation, which can happen, is that I've done it as an MC and I've had it done to me, right, is that I can neither fight effectively nor can I run away effectively.
Do you think characters should have a defence against that? So I'm thinking the kind of classic issue with the teenager versus the slasher, the horror movie aspect of the game, is that, you know, if you're not the big jock, then you can't run away and you can't fight. You're in terrible danger when physical violence is threatened against you.
But having a move called Runaway kind of implies, as a basic move, kind of implies that you are able to, potentially, at least be able to run away successfully from the threats that you might face.
Mm.
So having that in there and implying that that's an option, and making that an option, but then tying it into the same stat as your lash out physically, means that you have a choice of, like, you either put points into volatility, right, in which case you're good at both running and fighting, or you don't, in which case you suck at both. And if you find yourself in a physical situation, you could try and talk your way out of it, right, using your hot or your cold. But if it's fundamentally got to fisticuffs at that point, you're kind of stuck, right? Because at that point, trying to turn people on or shut people down, it becomes a lot harder narratively. So another thing I want to talk about is the backstories. And this is basically a way to establish the starting relationships, but also to get the string economy going a little bit. So you'll be giving away 1 or 2 strings and you'll be taking kind of 1 or 2 strings. But the backstories themselves are a bit of an uncomfortable mix for me of some backstories that are really effective, which are primarily because they're around relationships, but other ones that are more around either yourself or specific moments in your life which then don't point to a relationship. Like, for example, like the Chosen, their backstories are they have two friends who help them battling the kind of like the darkness. That's a really good kind of clear relationship that you've established there. Whereas things like the Fae or the vampire or the werewolf, right, have one of their backstories is really about themselves. It's about you wear your heart on your sleeve, or you're kind of uncontrollable, or you're beautiful, which actually tells you nothing about, or very little about, your specific relationships with other people. I see players put together kind of loner style characters, or want to put together kind of loner style characters, and these backstories unless you as an MC really drill it into them and essentially make them play out those scenes, right, the backstories get forgotten. Mm. They're just a way of getting a couple of strings and then what those backstories actually mean about those characters, right, and and how they interact with each other is left behind.
So I think there's two things here in the weaknesses, really, that number one, some of the descriptions of the relationships are just weak and don't drive towards an obvious action or an obvious interaction. And secondly, I think we're coming back to the abstractness of strings.
And it comes down to the strings as being too fluid as a currency. The final thing that I want to mention
is... Are you sure this is your final thing?
No. Is that I want to mention a couple of other things. The MC, as part of developing, instead of fronts, which is what they have in Apocalypse World, they have menaces. And the example given is kind of like a vampire overlord who's looking to take over, you know, a particular town. Having these strong external threats, right, laid out like that, push people to P versus E kind of play. Is that, oh, there's this big menace, this big threat out there, we will band together, because fundamentally we are the players. Right, and we understand the concept of a big external threat, we band together. Whereas actually what you should be looking for, and it does say you should be looking for these kind of wedges, but it's just not supported within the, properly, I don't think, within the development of the menaces. What are the things that are pushing the PCs apart? So really what I think a better way of thinking about it, instead of this system of menaces, is actually to think about what are this system of pressures that are on the PCs.
I think this is where the Buffy influence kind of plays against the strengths of the game. What I've always liked with menaces is not sitting down and thinking about a big bad, which is what is in the book. That is the Joss Whedon school of seasoned menaces. But kind of playing the game for a bit and then looking for the adult or authority figure that the players take against, and then re-expressing what they're rebelling against as being monstrous or supernatural in its own right, so playing to both of their natures.
I mean, I really enjoy playing Monster Hunter. Like I say, it's my most played game. I enjoy the stories that we create, but I often find that the game's working best when we're not triggering the mechanics. And this is like an old school kind of thing of like, oh, that game of D&D we played was so great, we barely even rolled the dice. And it gets to a point of where I'm in a scene and where players get a taste for the mechanics and they're starting to engage them more and more, then I know my game is starting to go wrong. Because each time we may be in the flow of a great scene, but then somebody picks up the dice, they work out the modifiers, they roll them, they stop narrating their story and they start calling moves by their own name of like, oh, I'm just going to turn them on, I'm going to roll my dice. Then we look up the result, then we work out how it impacts things. The mechanics there are working against the kind of experience that we want. The game is wanting people to have these kind of emotional conversations where they're really kind of like where they're really soul searching, and so that was an indicator to me that this is not a necessarily a fully effective or at least a fully kind of coherent design. But I think it is a fundamental truth that unless you are somebody who is completely exhaustive in terms of your playtesting, so someone like Ben Robbins who ran Microscope like 200 times, he writes, or he published it. Unless you're going to go through that kind of exhaustive playtesting, I think it is fair and inevitable to say that the game could be written better after 2 or 3 years of dozens or hundreds of people playing it than it could have been written at the end of your design stage. So I think I would love to see, and this is an idea that somebody in IndieMeet had, I would love to see, you know, a second edition of this game. Kind of Monster Hearts revamped. Take all the points in the game that maybe have caused a bit of confusion, or bits that just aren't kind of pulling in the right direction, or which aren't necessarily kind of coherent with the goal. Expand out the bits that are a bit whiffy. We're in this particular situation, we're engaging this particular mechanic, but it's just not leading us to an interesting place. Take all that experience from those hundreds of man hours of playtesting, essentially, and bake the best of that into a revised edition. Go back to what the the strong concept of the game and make sure that everything is working towards that. And then it's a genre that people love.
And I think what makes Monster Hearts different for me is the political reclamation of adolescence. It is the queer content. It's about the fact that its game design may be iffy, but its view and perspective on the world is quite distinctive. Because Monster Hearts starts with Twilight and puts it through a blender of identity politics, because it's genre plus a perspective.
So you raise a good point around what are the strengths in this game, and so what can be taken or what should be taken by other game designers, or what is it contributing to the conversation? The first thing, as you mentioned there, the concept of the queer content was something that, I mean, changed the way that I play and changed my level of openness to kind of playing with these concepts. The fact that it is a genre which appealed to such a demographic outside of regular role playing. The concept of this whole emotional hold. I mean, I really love this idea, and I really want to see more games with this concept of I am trying to achieve a level of a particular relationship with a person. The concept of the darker self that we mentioned, the more and a more wider application of it, where we give people permission, where designers give players permission to act in a very different manner for a particular part, and incorporating that within the social contract. And the concept of having a very strong agency over your actions, but not necessarily agency over how you feel. But like I say, second edition, right? Is it? I would love to see it.
Okay, so Monster Hearts is one for the bucket until it gets revamped. So we've just been discussing Monster Hearts, and in the course of that, we talked very knowledgeably about HX and other things.
Oh, so knowledgeably, yeah.
But the truth is that neither of us have actually played Apocalypse World.
No, that is a great sin in our own.
And there are many reasons why that might be, but I think we should put that right. And I think we should make a concentrated effort to play Apocalypse World. And what is interesting is that it's also in the process of getting a second edition.
So this is an example of a designer who is going back to something they've done a few years before, taking all the information from all the playtests and baking to a second edition. How interesting.
And let's see how that works.